Thank you. A map, we went to the corner of Main and 100, but there was no restaurant there. Okay, so we went around the block again, still no restaurant. Go around the block again, still no restaurant. Went to the corner of Main and 100, where's the restaurant? But that's when we realized, we had the wrong map for the wrong city. But maybe that's how life feels like for us right now. We've got the wrong map, because up until now, we've been doing everything they've been telling us to do. Work hard, study hard, stay out of trouble. Maybe we've tried church, maybe we've tried religion, make yourself a better person, but somehow it's not working. We're miserable, we're exhausted, and we're angry. So what if we have things round the wrong way? So welcome to our November talk series, where we're unleashing the power of paradox. We're flipping the script on an upside down world. We're looking at a story that Jesus tells, and Jesus has a paradox in his story, and he's going to use the paradox to flip our upside down world the right way back up. And today our question is this: the paradox of virtue, how can I be a better person? And we're going to answer this now in the form of a 25-minute talk from me now, followed by question and answer from you guys. So as I'm speaking, think of whatever question you want to ask, and afterwards there'll be a chance to either ask that out loud, raise your hand, use a microphone, or I think there'll be a Slido operating later. Think of whatever question you want to ask me, and I'll do my best to answer that question after the next song. So how can I be a better person? And we've just heard a story in the Bible, this time about an older brother. And this older brother, he wants to be a good person. And he follows a script on how to be a good person. But there's going to be a paradox in this story. And Jesus is going to use this paradox to flip the script for us. So how can I be a better person? Well, the script that the older brother follows is this. The script is, I need discipline, I need hard work, and I need self-control. In the story we just heard, Jesus says this: meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When this older son came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So the older son called one of the servants and he asked him, hey, what's going on? So the servant replied, your younger brother has come and your father has killed the fattened calf because he had and sound. And the older brother, he became angry. He refused to go in. So his father, he had to go out and plead with him. But the older brother answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. In this story from Jesus, we know there was a younger brother, we met him last week. He went outside looking for freedom and happiness. But today we meet the older brother who stays at home. He follows orders. He does what he's told. For him, it's all about discipline, hard work, and self-control, which is the Asian way, right? The Asian way is a life of delayed gratification. When I was in high school, I was the Asian in the high school, but all my Anglo friends, they all had girlfriends. But being the Asian, I had no girlfriend. So I asked my parents, hey, please, can I get a girlfriend? They go, no, not until you finish high school. So you finish high school, you say to your Asian parents, now can I get a girlfriend? They go, no, not until you finish university. So you finish university, now you say, now can I get a girlfriend? They go, no, not until you get a job. So you get a job, now can I get a girlfriend? They go, no, not until you've made enough money and saved up for a house. So now you make enough money, save up for a house. Now your parents come to you, why aren't you married yet? What's wrong with you? Stop being so selfish. Give us some grandchildren. But that's the Asian way, right? Delayed gratification. The rest of the world has FOMO. We have fear of mum and dad. So in this story, there's a younger brother. For him, it's all about freedom. But for this older brother, nah, it's going to be a life of discipline. For the younger brother, well, it's a life of no controls, But for the older brother, it's going to be self-control. For the younger brother, he's a rule breaker. But the older brother, he's going to be a rule keeper. The younger brother, wow, it's the Greek philosophy of hedonism. But for the older brother, it's going to be stoicism. Younger brother had a philosopher as a hero, it would be Epicurus, but for the older brother, it's going to be Epictetus. For the younger brother, it's a life of being irreligious, and I reckon the older brother would have seen himself as religious. The younger brother, it's a life of release, but the older brother, it's a life of restraint. Now, Mark Sayers, who's a pastor in Melbourne, he says, we go through every society, every culture will go through revolutions where we swing between revolutions of restraint to revolutions of release and then back to revolutions of restraint. I reckon about 20, 30 years ago, we were going through a revolution of release, but now in the last 5 or 10 years, we've come back to revolutions of restraint, which explains why these authors and books are so popular right now. Charles Duhigg, The Power of Habit. 12 Rules for Life, An antidote to Chaos. Angela Duckworth, Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Then we have Jocko Willink, US Navy SEAL, Discipline Equals Freedom. David Goggins, US Navy SEAL, You Can't Hurt Me, Master Your Mind, Defy the Odds. And then Admiral William McRaven, US Navy Special Ops, Make Your Bed. Little things that can change your life and maybe the world. And the whole idea is if we live a life of discipline, restraint, self-control, we create good habits that will change us and change the world into a better place. Now, as an Asian, we feel like rolling our eyes and saying, please. This is what we've been saying all along. Hello. This is why your Asian parents make you learn the piano. Not because they want you to become a piano player. No, they want you to be a doctor and lawyer. But they make you play the piano because it teaches you discipline, hard work, self-control, and good habits. It's the reason why your Asian parents make you do maths. Not that they know maths. Go ask your Asian parents what 13 times 7 is. They can't answer it. But no, they want you to do maths because it creates discipline, hard work, and self-control. It creates good habits. It's why as parents, you make your kids make their bed. You make them unstack the dishwasher. Why? It's about good habits, discipline, hard work, and self-control. And I love this vision because I want my kids to make their bed. I want my kids to unstack the dishwasher. So I bought them for Christmas, Jocko Willink, Discipline Equals Freedom. They were too young to read that, but he had a children's version of this, Way of the Warrior Kid, and I gave this to them for Christmas because I too want them to make their bed, unstack the dishwasher, and bit by bit, they will make this world a better place, one unstacked dishwasher at a time. And we all have this vision. We all believe in this. This is why all of us, no matter what, we want kids to become the older brother and not the younger brother. So why is the older brother so miserable, angry, and sad? Because this is the paradox of virtue. By living a life of purely self-discipline, hard work, and self-control, will you like who you become? Let's go back to the story. The older brother became angry. He refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But the older brother answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Oh, but when this younger son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you welcome him. You kill the fattened calf for him. Ah, the older brother becomes bitter, angry, miserable, and sad. What is going on? Why would a life of discipline, hard work, and self-control turn you into this? Because this is a paradox. Paradox number one, self-control makes you lose control at other people. So when you drive your car, what annoys you? This is the list of drivers who annoy me in increasing order. Number one, drivers who can't park. Number two, drivers don't indicate. Number three, drivers who drive too slow in the fast lane. So let's have audience participation here. Hands up if you too annoyed by drivers who can't park. Oh, okay, about 20%. Hands up if you're annoyed by drivers who don't indicate. Ah, oh, look at that, 70%, all right. Number three, drivers who drive too slow in the fast lane. Oh, 40%, okay, thank you. Now, what is it that annoys you about drivers who can't park, don't indicate, and drive too slow in the fast lane? What annoys you? You're thinking, come on, it's not that hard. Come on, it's not that hard. If I can do it, you can do it. So that's what annoys you, because you can do it, but they can't. So for those of you who didn't stick up your hand at the drivers who annoy you because they can't park, you're the ones who can't park. You're the ones giving Asians a bad name. Because it doesn't annoy you, because you can't do it. This is what annoys the older brother. Come on, if I can stay at home, if I can do what I'm told, why can't the younger brother do that? And maybe we feel the same as well. You know, like, hey, if I can study hard, why can't you? If I can get a job, why can't you? If I can exercise, watch what I eat, why can't you do the same? We look down on other people. It makes us self-righteous and judgmental. Paradox number two, self-control makes you lose control at God. And we all know the feeling. You go to a supermarket, there's a long line, you wake up, you wait there with your stuff, bit by bit, you move further down the queue, bit by bit, and you're almost at the front of the queue, and boom, they open up another checkout. And the person behind you goes to the checkout. You think, whoa, they're not next, I'm next. They're queue jumping. You lose control at that moment. And that's what the older brother does. He loses control because he's thinking, hey, my brother is queue jumping. How does he get a party? I haven't had a party yet. This is queue jumping. And Jesus is having a little dig at the religious leaders of the time because they were always annoyed at Jesus because Jesus was always mixing with tax collectors and sinners. He was eating with prostitutes. And the religious leaders are thinking, hey, how come you're mixing with them and not us? Maybe we too feel the same. You know that story where Jesus is dying on the cross and there's a thief dying on the cross next to him on the other cross, and the thief says to Jesus, hey, Jesus, hey, what do you reckon? Will you remember me? Will you let me into heaven? And Jesus says, yes, today you will be with me in heaven. And at that moment we think, how is he in heaven? He's done nothing to get in heaven. Hello, look at me. So this is queue jumping. And maybe we feel the same of people who are morally inferior to us. How are they ahead of the queue than us? And so we get angry at God. And paradox number three, self-control makes you lose control of yourself. This is the ultimate irony, the ultimate paradox. Now, the hardest thing about parenting, it's not the loss of sleep. The hardest thing about parenting, it's not the nappies thing. The hardest thing about parenting is the stroller, because I'm sorry, they do not fold up as advertised. I have a friend, meek, gentle, mild-mannered, doctor, kind, very patient. I saw this guy go rage monster on his stroller when it would not fold up. He could not get it into the boot of his car. Why? Because if you like being in control, you lose control when you have no control. But it's more than that. The Japanese have a saying, if you push a beach ball under the water long enough, it has to boom, pop up somewhere else with double the force, double the velocity. And what they're saying is this, if you live a life of self-restraint, self-control, and you repress your desires long enough, they will have to pop up somewhere else. And maybe they pop up in unusual ways. So the Japanese culture, we all know delayed gratification, high work ethic, self-control. But then these desires will pop up in other unusual ways. Or the usual ways will be binge drinking, overwork, and for some they have to withdraw from society altogether. But it's not just the Asian culture. They're now finding in all cultures where there's a high discipline, high work ethic, especially law, especially medicine, there is a disproportionate high level of drug abuse, drug dependency, self-harm, and suicide. So this is the ultimate irony. Asian parents are trying to push their kids into law and medicine because they're safe professions, but they're actually dangerous professions. The behavioral traits that get you into law and medicine are the same behavioral traits that will lead to danger. What is going on? This is Anna Lemke, Dopamine Nation. She lectures at Stanford University in the USA. She says in high work ethic cultures, there is a disproportionate high level of addictions. And you get your normal addictions, like you get your addictions to alcohol, to screens, to pornography, to gambling. But you get unusual addictions to behavioral traits. So this is interesting. Healthy behaviors become maladaptive behaviors. And normal behaviors become harmful behaviors to yourself and also your family. You can find yourself addicted to exercise. You can find yourself addicted to work. And actually what's going on is this. People who like to be in self-control get addicted to the feeling of being in control and the success and validation that comes with that to the point where they lose control. And even Jordan Peterson, Mr. 12 Rules for Life, only a few years ago found himself losing control of his physical health, his mental health, and he spiraled into a drug addiction. So what can we do from here? Well, this is where we have to flip the script. How can I be a good person? How can I be a better person? How can I be good enough? Well, it's not what we do, it's actually who we have. That's what will make us a better person. So let's go back to the story. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, the younger son. Put a ring on his finger, put sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf, the calf they've been waiting to kill. They've been storing it, feeding it, fattening. Let's kill it. Let's have a feast. Let's celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, but he's alive again. He was lost, but now he's found. So they began to celebrate. The younger son gets it right. He flips the script by coming home to a father who welcomes him just as he is. He doesn't have to make himself good enough for the father. The father is good enough for him. So how does this work? Well, let's flip the script. Flip number one, the father in the story is God. We have a God who throws parties. Now, I went to med school, so I studied medicine at university. And after I finished my studies, I graduated. They gave me a degree. There was a graduation ceremony. But I almost didn't make it. I looked at my transcript. I scraped through with a pass. I think I might have got 51% in medicine. But do you know what you call a med student who gets 51%? Doctor. That's all you need. Oh, that's all. And we have another saying in medicine, 51% is 1% wasted, because you only needed 50%. But many of my friends didn't make it. And that's the whole point. Where they didn't earn enough marks. They didn't pass. They didn't get the degree. They didn't get the graduation ceremony. And that's the whole point with the graduation ceremony. It's to prove that you made it. You earned your degree. You worked hard. You got enough marks to get the degree. That's what the graduation ceremony is for. But a party is different. You just turn up. You don't have to be good enough to earn a party. You don't earn a party. A party is a party because all you have to do is turn up. I still remember when my son had his one-year-old birthday party. And I remember thinking, he was sitting there. As we bring the cake out, we sing him happy birthday. He was delighted. He was smiling. He was happy. He was clapping. He was cheering. And I looked at him and think, how's this your party? What have you done to deserve a birthday party? We should be getting the party. We're the ones who fed you, clothed you, kept you alive. What have you done to deserve a birthday party? But that's the point. A party is a party because you don't have to earn it. You just turn up. And that's what the oldest son doesn't get. He goes all angry at the father because he's thinking, what has my younger son, my younger brother done to deserve this party? But he doesn't get it. You don't deserve a party. You don't have to be good enough for a party. You just turn up to a God who welcomes you just the way you are. Because there's also another flip, and it's flip number two. We have a God who saves us. Did you notice what happened to the youngest son when he came home? Several things happened to the youngest son. First thing was, the father puts a jacket on him. In the same way in golf, a jacket says, you are now the champion. The father puts a robe around him. Then the father gives him a ring. In the same way in basketball, this is a trophy. The father gives him his ring and say, hey, you are now one of us. You are in the family. And then the father gives him a steak. But then, for this to happen, this has to happen. A cow has to die for this to happen. What's going on here? I think in this story, Jesus is already giving a little hint that an exchange is going to happen. Because the father explains it this way. Hey, what's dead is alive. What's lost is found. But yeah, because there's a swap that's going to take place. For what's dead to be alive, a cow has to die. For what's lost to be found, the father now has to lose his robe, lose his ring to the son. There's an exchange. And this points us forward to that day when Jesus will die on a cross in our place. And that's the great exchange. And if we love, worship, and follow Jesus, if we choose to be loyal to Jesus, and we give him our life, Jesus gives us his life. It's the great swap. And so that in Jesus now, God gives us his robe of righteousness. You are righteous. God gives us his ring of adoption. You are in the family. You are my child. I'm your father. I love you. And Jesus gives us his life. We have a brand new life. It's a great exchange. Now, last year, my family and I, we bought a new family car. But it wasn't a new car. We bought it off Facebook Marketplace. What could go wrong? It's about 20 years old. It's done about 300,000, no, it's done over 300,000 kilometres. And it's an old, tired car. When you drive it, you think, yeah, you've done a lot of mileage. But then, just the other month, we swapped the tyres. We got rid of the old tyres. We put brand new tyres on it. Now it drives like a new car. We swapped out the old, brought in the new. And that's what Jesus is saying. Hey, come to me. Let's do a swap. Come to me with your old, tired life. Come to me with your guilt, your shame, your hurt, your sin, your regret, your brokenness, your secrets, your darkness. Come to me and give me that, and I'll exchange it, and I'll give you a new life. A new heart, where I fill you with my spirit, where you are clean, you're washed, you're renewed, you're restored, you are forgiven. So how can I be a better person? Well, we actually have three choices. Jesus is showing us in this story, we have three choices. We can be like the younger brother who went outside looking for freedom and happiness, but he only found emptiness and regret. Or we can be like the older brother who tries to try really hard to be good enough, to be a good person, but he ends up miserable, angry, and sad. Or instead, we can look up. We can look up and realize, you know what? I have a God who will take me just the way I am because he's the God who throws parties. He's the God who saves me. He's the God who gives me a brand new life. So let's go back to our question. It was this: how can I be a better person? And we've seen, typically, we're told this script, you've got to try really hard. You need discipline, you need hard work, and you need self-control. But we've seen if this is all we do, we'll actually end up an angry person. Will you like who you become? And so the flip then is, well, it's not what we do to become a better person, it's who we have. Can I come home to God who just loves me just the way I am? He will throw a party. I don't have to be good enough for this party. I just turn up and he will save me and he will give me a brand new life. So in our family, we have a morning ritual. We unstack the dishwasher. And basically I just say to my three boys, hey, boys, unstack the dishwasher, and boom, they will do it. Discipline, hard work, self-control. But why? Because it's their home and I'm their dad. And I love them and they love me. That's why they unstack the dishwasher. That's where the discipline, hard work, and self-control comes from. But if I was to open the door, yelled out a random stranger, hey, unstack my dishwasher, they're not going to do it. Why? Because it's not their home. I'm not their dad. They don't love me. I don't love them. That would just make them angry and sad if they had to unstack my dishwasher. See, you have to come home first. You have to have a home where God is your Father, where there's a God who loves you, a God who sees you, a God who understands you, and He throws you a party. He takes you just the way you are. You don't have to be good enough for this God. You don't have to make yourself good enough for this God. He is good enough for you because He will throw you a party and He will give you a brand new life and He will make you the better person you want to be from the inside out.